Okay. Hey, it's Stephanie Staples, and welcome to Your Life Unlimited. We are always trying to give you a little bit of ideas, insight, and inspiration for a better living. And I'm excited. You know, I got to tell you the truth here, full disclosure. So I often have authors on the show, and I try very, very hard to read their books in their entirety. And sometimes it's easier than others. But the author that I'm going to introduce you to today is her book is called Mother of the Year and Other Elusive Awards. And I thought very, very appropriate, especially for today. And I couldn't stop reading the book. It's funny how when it's not a great book, you just don't have time to read. And when it's a really good book, I'm reading in the bathroom, I'm reading the red lights. And so I was literally finishing it on the way to the studio today and finished it in the parking lot of CJOB. And I'm really excited to introduce you to Kaylin Falk. So stay tuned. That'll be coming up. There's lots of cool information that you need to hear. So it's been about 22 years since I got that phone call from my mom. I remember exactly where I was standing. I remember she was all choked up when she delivered the news to me. My older sister had had her baby and they were quite certain he had Down syndrome. I remember shock, I remember silence, and I don't remember anything else. Having delivered my third perfectly healthy child less than 2 months prior, my emotions were unsure where to go. I remember visiting my sister and her husband and the baby in the hospital. I remember tears and hugs and desperately trying to find the right words when I knew there weren't any. It seemed everything that I wanted to say was trite and wrong and insignificant. Has this ever happened to you where you just wanted to be helpful and kind and understanding in a difficult situation, but you just feel ill-equipped to deal with the circumstances at hand? Ignoring the issue, whether it's a death, the diagnosis, or uncomfortable or awkward topic, is rarely the right answer. How can we appropriately convey what we feel? A sympathy for their sadness, disappointment, hurt, angriness, fill in your blank here. How can we convey it? And what do we do with the guilt that we have because said incident didn't happen to us? We feel sorry, we feel sad, we feel their pain. How can we be supportive and caring without being condescending and making them feel pitied? How can we be helpful without being too intrusive or seeming to overcompensate? Fast forward many, many years and many more difficult situations, and I wish I could tell you that I found the right answer, the perfect words. But the truth is, I'm not sure that I've become any better at handling these things. Our wanting to make things better doesn't make them so. Our wanting to handle things more eloquently doesn't make it so. Wishing and hoping that things would be easier, different, better doesn't make it so. The only thing I do know for sure, in my humble opinion, is that generally something is better than nothing. A hug, a sincere offering, even saying, I just don't know what to say or I'm here for you, is better than pretending that there's not an elephant in the room. My nephew is now 22, and I don't know. I know those who know him probably see very limited verbal skills, challenging behaviors, and cognitive limits. All we see is a well-groomed young man who loves music and friends and movies and life. He is someone who loves laughing and conversations and stuffed animals. He has a big circle of people who love and support him and his family, who accept him and love him for who he is and not for what he has or hasn't done. My sister is just like every other mother. She worries, she laughs, she gets frustrated, she rejoices. She gets disappointed and she feels proud. No one knows what she's gone through on a personal level with her son. No one knows how many nights she's cried herself to sleep or felt judged or inadequate or angry or guilty. With the birth of her son came added benefits of a whole new community of wonderful people that she might otherwise never have known. Her own clubhouse with her own peeps, one might say. And I know she wouldn't trade her boy for the world. He's a gift, albeit not the one she expected, but a gift nonetheless. Parenthood is not for the faint of heart, and the easy way out has birth control written all over it. But for those of us who choose to take up the challenge, can I suggest that we find ways to support each other, not judge each other, to encourage each other, not condemn each other, to use the adage it takes a community to raise a child and to do for and with other families who may have challenges that are different from ours. Having a perfect child does not make you a perfect parent any more than having a child with special needs makes you imperfect. We all have challenges, we all have struggles, and we're all doing the best we can with the information we have at the moment, with the circumstances surrounding us at the time. If you want to be a better mother, a better friend, a better communicator, a better ... do the one thing that is guaranteed to get you there. It's my mantra and feel free to make it your own. Work harder on yourself than on anything else. Work harder on yourself than on anything else. Everything else will get better from there. And that's what this show is all about. I hope you will join me on that personal development ride. And to all the mothers out there, fathers out there, and fabulous folks out there who are influential in the lives of children, even when you don't have to be, I say thanks. Hang in there. Keep doing your best. Your best really is good enough. Back in a moment on Your Life Unlimited. Welcome back to the show. Big shout out to TiberRiver.ca, 408 Academy, 1650 Keniston Road. Even the website smells good. Check them out for all your esthetician needs. I'm pretty darn excited because I'm in the studio with Kaylin Falk. She's the author of a new book called Mother of the Year and Other Elusive Awards. Kaylin, you sort of heard my intro. Mm-hmm. How on spot do you think I was, or give me a little bit of feedback on there. How can we serve when we hear?
Yeah, I think I really appreciate the awareness of there's something that needs to be said, but we don't know what it is. And, you know, a secret from this side of the fence is when my friends have said, my child is autistic, I haven't always responded appropriately either. There isn't one right thing to say. And I think it really is simply the willingness to be present to the other person and to hang on and just say, I have no idea, but I am here with you.
I love the idea of being present. The other thing you bring to the table, so your book is about the subtitle is Misadventures in Autism.
Yeah.
I really respect the honesty and the rawness that you shared in your book. Like I said, it was a very compelling read. I don't have somebody with autism in my family, but we all are affected somehow, some way, by situations like this. So it really helped me to understand better. It's a gift that you wrote this book.
Oh, thank you.
What brought it to fruition?
So many different factors. I think one thing that was very strong is that there is a narrative in autism that is appropriate of my child has something, we're fighting to get rid of it, and we all want our life to be normal again. And a lot of the books that have been out in the field are the stories of recovery or of miracles. And so so that the classic narrative that we hear as parents who are raising our own children is my child had autism, but I refused to give up and I never accepted it. And we fought. And then 3 years later, we found a miracle cure. And, you know, in the actual population, that's so rare. And yet in the written literature, it's a huge theme. And so, and I know that whenever the word autism comes up, people think of me because I'm fairly infamous for being part of the community. But people will give me books like that as a way to inspire me. And what I've experienced is books like that are like a stick that I can beat myself up with. Of, oh, then I'm not trying hard enough. Then I'm not doing the right thing. Then I maybe did give up. And so then it's my fault that my child is autistic. And so I felt, you know, and I bought into that. I really bought in the first couple of years that Noah was diagnosed of, okay, we're going to do 40 hours a week of treatment. We're going to try special diets. We're going to pray. We're going to do everything that we can. And I found that by the time he was about 7, I thought I have a choice to make. I can either love this kid that's right in front of me and get to know him and try and get the very best for him, or I can hang on to this dream of what my kid could be. But that hanging on to that was not making me able to love the boy that was right in front of me anymore. So I kind of went, you know, I have to say I did try everything and I failed. And then this is not going to be about failure anymore. This is going to be about something else. Maybe instead of me trying to change my story, it's about maybe a deeper thing about what does it mean to be human, or what does Noah have to teach me, or what is this parenting thing really about anyway? Is it about making our children just like us and not have to have any pain? Or is there something that I'm missing by being so focused on that one goal?
I think that we can take this, you know, I read this book, which is about a child with autism and your adventures. But I think we can take that a step further. And I think my challenge always is, as adult learners, is that how can we take this information and use it in our own life? And for me, not just to become more understanding and aware of what's going on with parents with challenging situations, but our own children, whatever their challenge is, how can we just stop, or even just people, our colleagues, maybe just stop trying to change everybody.
Right.
And just how can we love and accept and appreciate where we are right now in this situation? I think that is a gift.
Right. And that's what I've heard, too. Of obviously, my story is rooted in autism. Autism has been the big teacher for me. And yet, really, it's a story of vulnerability. It's of me
exactly.
saying,
I'm not perfect.
I'm not perfect. I'm actually clearly inadequate to, and yet, can I find compassion here? And what's my journey? And what I found is that I knew that the autism community would appreciate this book because there's a lot of people like me that want to hear, we have tried, just mm-hmm. because my child is still autistic does not mean that I did not try or that I gave up. So I knew that they would appreciate it. And there's been a lot of really great conversations that have come out of that. But what I've really, really appreciated and have been surprised by is other parents just saying they relate to, you know, that political, that judgy mm-hmm. thing of there's a right way to parent and there's a wrong way and everyone should do this. And so they're being able, they're coming to me and telling me stories of when they felt inadequate or when they weren't up for the challenge. And then people that don't have children at all are finding, because really I think what my work was I have to accept my story. This is what this, my story includes autism. But I think people are hearing the deeper themes of whatever their story is, whether it's infertility and they don't even have a chance to parent, whether it's self-esteem, whatever their issue is, if they accept the truth of their story and they're vulnerable about it, it really does open up to a deeper kind of conversation.
I think it's a beautiful thing. And I really loved, because there were so many things. You can see my book. It's all dog-eared all over the place. but the very end of the book, you were talking about Autism Awareness Day, and then you make some promises.
Right.
And so I think those are great lessons. We share them.
Right. Well, I mean, the basic premise is on Autism Awareness Day, it often comes up of that's the one day of let's beat autism and let's get rid of autism. And so I just suggested maybe there's one day where we could let go of that and simply reach out to people that are in the autism community or people who support the autism community and just love them. And then my response was that there are other words that color other people's lives. And I really want to be, just because, you know, autism is the thing that I know, I really want to be open to hearing other people's stories and where they feel vulnerable or what experiences they've had that have made them feel marginalized. And so
that I think is a huge learning right there for all of us.
Right.
We each have our word or our thing that we're passionate about, or our cause or whichever, but to be open to the word that colors other people's, I think that's great.
Right. So it's not just about, I want everyone to understand me and find the right words, you know, the next time they hear about autism, but it's how do we attend each other and hold each other's stories really carefully and with honor.
I think that makes incredible amount of sense. And I love how you really value the caregivers as well. Mm. So the respite workers and how you say, I was thrust into this world. This was not my choice, but other people. And so a million kudos to people out there who are support workers for various.
Absolutely. I mean, I say pretty clearly, I just felt nervous around disabled people because I'm quite self-conscious. I want to do the right thing. I don't know what the words are and stuff. And so I just feel awkward. And so it's easier just to avoid disabled people, right? Or people that are different from me. And then this team of people that I found, the respite workers that have no reason to come into this field, and they've just come and they have gone through that awkward period of, so what do we do? Now we're in public and we're in an awkward situation. You don't have to be, but, they've chosen to be with me, and those people are so valuable. We could not raise our son without our respite team.
And I think all of us need to acknowledge people who are doing caregiving in various different roles. It's a huge, and it's by choice. So that, if you are one of those providers, it's a gift. And I think
when you're
in that world, it comes easily and effortlessly to you, and you just think, oh, anybody could do it. But I'm here to tell you that no, not everybody could do it, for, you know, any amount of money. And they do it often for very, very modest amount of money.
They sure do. So it's a really special group of people.
Absolutely. Back in a moment on Your Life Unlimited. It's Stephanie Staples with the Your Life Unlimited Quick Tip of the Week. It doesn't have to be a special day of the year to let people who have raised you know how important they are to you. Here are three ways I invite, challenge, and encourage you to pick one and implement it this week. Phone. It doesn't matter if you don't have anything to say, if you don't have anything new or exciting to report. They just want to hear from you. It doesn't matter if the call lasts 2 minutes or if you leave a message on their machine. You get a point for trying. It shows them you were thinking of them. ET phone home. Share a memory with them of something that they did that sincerely impacted you. Anything that starts with remember when... ... and ending with That really meant a lot to me. Should go over significantly well. Start a tradition. Maybe the first Sunday of the month brunch, a first day of the new season game day, an annual weekend excursion. Get creative, but get regular. They say the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, and the second best time is right now. Plan to start a new tradition. Welcome back to the show. Big shout out to First Impression Hair and Skin.ca. If you are looking for a place to make you feel good, they are your ladies. I am interviewing Caitlin Falk. She is the author of Mother of the Year and other elusive awards. It's called Misadventures in Autism, but it's about so much more than that. Check out Caitlin's website at caitlinfalk.com. You can grab the book at McNally's or on Amazon. She writes, I wanted to write a book that would make me look fabulous and you feel inadequate. However, autism has a way of writing its own story. Mm-hmm. And you just get super honest. And I mean, you know, I'm reading this stuff. I'm crying. I'm laughing. You're going through the gamut of emotions. Something as simple. Well, let's just start with the stages of grief. So finding, and you added your own stage of grief, kind of dealing with your diagnosis of your son.
Right. I think all of us have to, you know, and this is famous kind of work of what the stages of grief are. And we all get caught in certain parts, you know, so there's denial and not even wanting to have the label. There's, anger. And it could be anger directed at yourself or the medical system or at other people. It's very easy to find one person to just put all of your anger onto. So there's a lot of just support people that get our rage because there isn't really anything to be angry at, but right. It feels better when
or
it's
anyone.
Directed.
And so often it's misdirected.
True. So it's the one neighbor that said the one wrong thing. Right. And it's like, you know, it's really not about that. It's just
it's about the 20 misappropriate things before
totally.
That maybe.
And it's just that it's unfair. And so someone needs to be told off, right?
Which is a good lesson for all of us listening as well, I think, that we don't always have to take everything so personally. Like if somebody blows up at you, there's probably a whole lot more
right.
under the level of the water than maybe what happened at that moment.
Right. And I think, I mean, when the diagnosis first came, I was really angry and I was very brittle, right? And so I just, I was probably not as gracious as I could be. And so looking back, I thought, oh yeah, some people got an unfair dose of my anger. And what I realize is that then people like you who are trying to say the right thing and really wanting to be right, it's sort of if you say even slightly the wrong thing, you might get a lot of anger, but it's not for you. It's just, but then if you have the capacity to just hold it and recognize, mm-hmm. like, just don't get defensive about it. Just know that mm-hmm. it's got to go somewhere.
Right.
So obviously you've been a safe enough person to hear it.
That's
right?
A nice way to look at it.
Yeah, exactly. And then, I mean, there's other phases too of trying to bargain of if I am a good person, then my son will get better. If I try hard enough, he will, whatever. But the stage that as I was kind of going through the different stages of grief, I realized that there is, there's an adjustment phase. And with autism, it's lifelong. And I think because there is that right at the beginning, this idea that there might be a miracle. And so you have 3 years to try really hard to do everything you can. It burns you out. And so there is a time where you need to say, this really is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And you need to step back and you need to kind of almost train again. There's things that I had to build in my own life, how to build up my resilience. There was a strong sense at the beginning of there's some family members that really wanted to be supportive. And they said, you don't need respite. You know, I'll do it for you. But I thought, I really need respite. I need a bigger net. And so even though it's harder in the moment to find extra people, and even though it was experienced as rejection by some of my family of, no, you're not enough. I need like a team of eight, not just one person that I'm hanging on to. And so that also lets you be a bit more gracious. So if one respite person actually decides to have their own life and move mm-hmm. on, then you can say, that's awesome. It was lovely having you, instead of you are the only support that I have.
Right.
You
and
cannot
so this
leave.
Is such great advice for anybody. Like
totally.
We all need a bigger net.
We
all
need
a bigger
net
than
yeah.
we think we need.
Yeah. And we all need to just, whenever you're facing, I think there are times of if you're at work and you're going through an adjustment period, there's like a 6 month window of you just have to hunker down and get through it. And you have to maybe pull back from some of your activities just to ride out that storm. But there's other things like autism or like a new medical diagnosis or even just a major allergy. Those are things that you can't hunker down. You can only hunker down for about 6 months, and then you wear out. And so sometimes it's like that's not a call to use willpower and intellect to muscle your way through it. That's a time to call and step back and reorganize your life so that you have increased your capacity. So, and for me too, it was, I'm a spiritual director. And one of the things is I need a new understanding of what the holy is or what God is, because if it's going to be God is my magic penny that I say, please give me a parking spot. Mm-hmm. And that is not a God that can take me through this. I need to deepen my practice and deepen my understanding of who God is. And I have to deepen my understanding of who I am. And I have to at some point become friends with, I am not perfect. And I have to not hold that against myself.
That was sort of the theme. So Kaylin was our mm-hmm. speaker at our last Motivational Mondays or Mo Mondays event. And actually the next one is coming up on June 16th. They've all been sold out. So if you haven't been to one, please get your tickets now, yourlifeunlimited.ca, whatever city you're listening to this from. There's probably one in your city. And if there isn't, well, you could start one because they're amazing events. So mm-hmm. you did a great job. Actually, I think I will never forget how you stood up and you said, mm-hmm. oh, this is my son's autism and now he's being scouted for colleges and everybody yeah. claps. And then you're like, that's not the truth.
Well, and the biggest thing was I said, I want to tell my story mm-hmm. and I want it to include the fact that he got over autism and that, you know, and people in that believed what I was mm-hmm. saying. And I'm not used to lying. And so it was very hard for me to you know, start that way. But then when people started clapping, I thought, oh, that's so true. Everyone mm-hmm. wants this story.
Everybody wants a happy ending.
And nobody wants to see yeah. anybody else suffer. And yeah. everyone says, good for you. Because they're, and I could see my esteem of, if I got out and now colleges are recruiting my son, like I really am special. Mm-hmm. And so I had that moment of the applause and that really actually kind of threw me. But my point was, that's a story I want to tell, but that's not my story.
Right.
And so it is walking to, it's a quieter story and it's not, I don't know if, some people have talked about making a reality show of my life because there's a lot of drama yeah. and there's all sorts of crazy things that have happened, but nobody's going to make a Disney movie out of my life. Yeah. I'm not a superhero. But I feel like there's beauty in this life too, but it's not the narrative that everyone wants for me or that I want for myself.
Absolutely. I think when other people are looking in as well, we all think, oh my gosh, I couldn't do that. I don't know what I'd do. But we all do what we have to do to get through what we have to get through. And we all do what we have to do.
So exactly.
We're going to talk more with Kaylin Falk back in a moment on Your Life Unlimited. Welcome back to Your Life Unlimited. A big shout out to vivacityfitness.ca, keeping you in great shape. I am speaking with Kaylin Falk. She is the author of Mother of the Year and other elusive awards, Misadventures in Autism. But it's about so much more than autism. Although I must say the autism stories, as someone who doesn't have experience in that area, I mean, your house burned down.
It sure did.
Like that's, I don't know. And you pulled your son out of the river. And like, yeah. It's just like, oh my gosh, on and on it goes.
Right. And I mean, that's what I even say in the back of my book. Of one of the major impetuses for writing the book was... when Noah jumped in the river at the Forks about 4 years ago. And so we were on the news and it required the police to intervene and everything. It was this huge deal. And so they had me on the news and they were saying, why is this teenager in the river? And I know that the news people were even making jokes about it's a hot day and this teenager needs to jump in. And I just said, you know, we've been under so much stress. Our house burned down 6 weeks ago. We've been in a hotel. We just moved into this new house. All Noah wanted to do was get to this cabin that we rent every year. So I think he thought he would just swim there, wow. right? He's a good swimmer. He wasn't, I was trying to say, like, it's the situation that was going to kill us, not just the river. But then as I was talking about, like, I was trying to describe this, just the reality of our lives of, you know, our house burned down and we were in a hotel and we've got all this stuff. And I just thought there's no way that there's an easy soundbite that you can find for my life. And so it really did take some time to just, I need to write out some of the things that have happened. And I needed to be more honest. I think I like to be positive and other people want me to be well. And so, and I want my son to be accepted. And so I tell the stories of when Noah succeeded. But I thought, you know, it's time to tell some of the stories of the reality of our life. There have been times where Noah's been aggressive to me. There's been times our fire was inadvertent, but it was just Noah loves art and he was taping pictures to lights because he wanted to see how the light would change. And he's thrown t-shirts over light bulbs before. Like, it's just this ongoing, he's not trying to wreck things. Mm-hmm. He just is not even aware of the impact of his decisions. And so it's, you know, walking that tension of trying to honor my son and help other people not be afraid of him, and yet speak honestly of, it is a lovely life and we adore him and he's a gift, and it is actually a very different kind of life, and there is
a
difficulty.
I think the word you used was relentless. Like, I guess
it's a little relentless.
It just doesn't. Yeah. It doesn't end. There is no end, right? It just keeps. Yeah. It's a marathon, as you said.
Yeah.
So you talk also about your world getting smaller.
Yeah. When I had Noah, I was I had a dance company, and I was a teacher too. I had 120 students, and I had a staff of 10, and I was kind of a person that had accomplished a lot. And I had this view that I would have kids and I'd be working and I'd be this big influencer. And then I realized my life is going to be much smaller than I thought. Just little things. He was in a therapy program where I had to be at home. I couldn't even leave the house to go shopping for groceries if he was in the house, but he was with tutors. And so I wasn't actually necessary. I was just sort of in my house, not being able to go anywhere. And then when he was in school, our school decided, the parent committee decided that it was too hard to have Noah at lunch. And so they had to have me pick him up from 12 till 1. So the minute he started school, I got a job and I was working. And then we got a call about a week in of, Noah cannot stay for lunch. You have to be here from 12 to 1. And so I found myself, not only am I a stay-at-home mom with a disabled child, like, this is not what I thought my life was going to be like. I really did think that I would be influencing, that I would not have to sacrifice so much. I wasn't a person that was thinking that I was going to be staying at home. And so it really has called me to a place of depth of, my worth is not about how many people know me and how much money I make. Every time we go to the bank, they're always like, well, you're the secondary signer because your value is so much less financially than your husband. And it's like, my value is not going to be in finances, but you know, in many ways there's, you know, my husband and I, when we got married, we said we're both going to work part-time and we're both going to parent part-time because my husband is so great.
Which is cool. That's
it's so
cool
great
thing,
and it's such a feminist view. And then it was like, we can't, someone has to hold up. We're supporting a whole team of people. Someone has to be at home every day. And so both of us kind of went, oh, this isn't quite the life that we thought we were going to live. And it's looking so much more traditional. We thought we'd have this like wild, pioneering kind of life. And so, so now that Noah's 16, I'm starting to see that my time is getting bigger again. I'm able to step a little bit more into life. And so that's good. 40 is not too late, but I'm a little bit of a... I'm the tortoise in this story.
That's okay. There is no rush. We all get to the finish line at some point.
Yes. I think I'm going to peak at 80. That's my plan.
I read that the new middle age is going to be 85. So we
absolutely
have plenty of
time.
I'm
there for you.
No worries. You talk also about losing yourself and your work as a spiritual director. Mm-hmm. I'm curious. And even when I was telling my husband about some of the stories, the first thing he said was, "There are better people than me. I couldn't do this." And
But he would.
That's what I say too.
You know,
it's
what?
Like, you do what you do.
Exactly. Because if I believe I'm a better person and that's why Noah came to me, what does that say about the universe? That, and if you're pregnant and I say, oh, I hope that you have a disabled child because you're so great.
Yeah. It doesn't
it's just
true.
A skewed ver- it's just no. This is what happens, and this is who's come to us. And so we're shaped by the people in our community, whether it's our children or our family or the people that we choose to make family, we're shaped by them if we're open to them. And then we become, hopefully all of us become better because everyone calls us to be bigger, to hold more.
I think that makes a complete and utter sense. Was it therapeutic writing the book for you? Did it?
It was great. I mean, I went through the process of, I felt great when I wrote it. I felt on top of the world. And then I got it and I thought, oh, this is a terrible book. And then I thought, I am a terrible person. And then I thought, I'm inadequate and it's not enough. And then I think those are just the stages of creativity, right? You just have to kind of go through, it's a little bit of a shame hangover.
You're not just writing a book about how to be more spiritual, right? It's your personal story. I know when I was handing my book out, it was like, I'd hold it high with one hand. I didn't want to let go. It's like, no, because I feel like if you don't like this book, you don't like me.
True. And it's also because I still am working out. I wish that I had a different story. Like, it really got me to a place of, but this is my story. This is all I have. Mm-hmm. I didn't talk about faith as much as you'd think a spiritual director would. I didn't talk about my husband as much as a happily married woman would. The feedback that I've got has been primarily positive, but this is what was here.
But isn't this beautiful? If we could all write our story and nobody has to apologize for their story.
Right.
You don't have to be perfect. It doesn't. How many of us have the life that we think that we were going to had when we were 18?
Right.
It doesn't work out that way, but this is our story. We get to own it. We get
exactly.
to be proud of it. We get to acknowledge what went great and forgive ourselves.
If it's a book about imperfection, how great that it isn't perfect itself, because if I just aced the story, then it's sort of, but there's something that I'm still learning about. It's not enough, and yet it is what it is.
Right. And for all of us, too, the rest is still unwritten, right?
Totally.
Every morning we wake up, it's a new opportunity, and what can we do now? How can we move forward? What was, and onward we go.
Yeah.
Ah, it's all good. Thank you for sharing your story. Back in a moment on Your Life Unlimited. If you like what you're hearing, please check out yourlifeunlimited.ca. I would love to come talk to your team about bringing their A game to work and life. And if you're ready to start coaching, there is no better time. Now is the time. YourLifeUnlimited.ca. You can find me on Facebook and check out the next Mo Mondays in your area, YourLifeUnlimited.ca/events. I've been speaking with Kaylin Falk, author of Mother of the Year and other elusive awards. I highly recommend it. Check out KaylinFalk.com for more information. Kaylin, if there was just one thing that you really wanted people to know, what would that one thing be?
I think I would draw on a quote from Brené Brown of, we are inadequate, we are hardwired for struggle, and we are worthy of love. And that goes for disabled people, it goes for me, and it goes for everyone that's listening.
Couldn't have said it any better myself. Thanks so much for joining us. This is Stephanie Staples, encouraging you to live your life unlimited.